Good morning and welcome to Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
Good morning, I'm Richard Fitzgerald. Friday the 3rd of May, how's it going?
And excited to have you back in the studio. It's been a while, Richard. How do you feel being back?
I love being on the show with you, Lubna. Always good fun. back in the studio, and also the back and forth that we'll have, I'm sure.
Exactly,
no doubt.
Exactly. Hey, it's good. Some disagreements are good sometimes. You
know? Difference of opinions rather than disagreements. Yeah,
I like that diplomatic sense. We've got a lot of stories for today. Our tax dollars shouldn't leave America until it looks like Dubai. That's according to Andrew Frisella, very big guy in the US. People are saying he's the next Joe Rogan. And Rami has cut losses by half. Their subscriber growth is showing recovery. We'll talk about that. Regional stock markets should allow non-profitable companies to list. They should follow suit with what the Western exchanges do. That's according to an Egyptian entrepreneur. And then Hermes is under fire yet again. Hermes. For blacklisting customers who placed their bags on the floor. They said it was disrespectful towards the bags. Dubai and Abu Dhabi are among the top five places to work in 2024. And finally, UAE companies have nearly 11% female board members, exceeding the GCC average. Lovely to hear that.
Interesting.
And a moment of silence as the UAE is mourning the passing of Sheikh Tahnoon bin Muhammad Al-Nahyan. So we'd like to have a moment of silence for him. He was a very long time, not only advisor to the founding father of the UAE, Sheikh Zayed, but also a friend. So a moment of silence for him. Right, moving on to Andrew Frisella. Have you heard of him before?
I haven't, actually.
He's becoming quite big in the US, very kind of Joe Rogan style. He's a podcaster, he's an author, he's also an entrepreneur. And he's saying, our tax dollars shouldn't leave America until it looks like Dubai. Mm. And it makes sense. He's very angry. He praised Dubai for its, you know, very low crime here, very safe. He said the streets are absolutely beautiful. It's the most beautiful city, and he doesn't want his tax dollars going towards other areas, be it politics, be it elsewhere.
Yeah, I think there was a new bill signed that included $90 billion of external foreign aid, $65 billion into Ukraine and things like that. And often when people criticize those external investments, be it whatever, not investments, but funds going out of the country, people are in any country, people are supposed to be conservative or right-wing if they want to spend in their own land. But like, if you think of it rationally, it's like if you have a home and you're investing in your kids' education, and you put it in someone else's kids' education, humanitarian, like, of course, humanitarian aid and, you know, philanthropy is really important. But I don't think anyone should be criticized for wanting a better livelihood at home. You know, Saudi's investment policies for Saudi, Hassan and Sheikh Mohammed wants Dubai to be now and everyone to have a good time here now. And I agree with a lot of the sentiment in the US, but often, Lubna, it's seen as, you know, America first, like the Trump mantra of make America great again. But what's wrong with that? Like, France is often has a protectionism, France first approach to businesses and to politics. But what's wrong with that? You know, and I think they're right.
Exactly.
But what's also interesting about this is Dubai is becoming a zeitgeisty reference points in culture,
exactly,
in podcasts, and no one's really questioning it. But like, imagine, because when we were growing up, it was New York, New York. Now it's Dubai, Dubai.
I mean, we've seen that with Tucker Carlson. He said that on stage here. He was really upset about it because, as you said, you know, I grew up dreaming about going to California. California Dreaming, you know, is one of my favorite songs. I really, really, you know, was obsessed with it. You know, watching the Beatles, also listening to the Beatles, the Beach Boys, all the movies around them. Like, we became
Absolutely.
Obsessed with, you know, admiring that sort of
that life,
yeah.
American dream, everything that
American
promised
dream.
The weather, the promise of it, the society, the multicultural. And it is really interesting that these things are being said about Dubai and has happened in a short time. You know, when people sort of slag off other cities who are ambitious in the region, why can't the same thing happen? Like, Dubai is really a North Star for many places, not just in the region.
Absolutely. And Saudi is up next. And Rami, you posted something lovely on your story yesterday. I really liked it. So, and Rami, obviously, Abu Dhabi based, Nasdaq listed streaming service. We love homegrown businesses here, but it cut its operating losses by half, from $5.4 million last year to $2.7 million. And it revealed in its financial report, it also increased 18% year on year when it comes to paying subscribers. That's a big number for an increase for paying subscribers. That's in Q1 this year. Also reported an 8% year-on-year rise in revenue for the quarter, thanks mainly to a 27% surge in subscription revenue. Good to hear, because they had a very tough 2023.
Yeah, I think, speaking to the founders recently as well, I think their numbers would have looked even better if their Egyptian revenue was on par with the dollar, but the currency devalued a couple of times there, if not more lately. So sometimes those externalities, you know, I think that they probably would be profitable by now, which is great. Hundreds of engineers out of Beirut listing a company on the stock market, Nasdaq. We always talk about this as a success, but I do think, personally, like when we share our numbers, the fact that we're a modern media company, we're profitable, kind of goes unnoticed a lot of the time, because mm-hmm. media mm-hmm. companies in the US and in the region are just assumed to be loss making and tech based and things like that. But so I do think that the goal for everyone is to be viable and profitable.
And you posted, and Rami made X amount of losses.
2.7 million losses,
August just made 1.8 million in profit.
Yeah, and our EBITDA is even higher. It's like 2.3 million EBITDA. And, you know, firstly,
maybe they should have you as an advisor on their board.
Well,
I mean,
we could. We don't.
Why
need,
not?
Well, we should. Let's have a female on their board for one of our future stories. One of our team members, maybe Lubna yourself.
Maybe myself. Yeah.
just
take the company down, basically. Not at all.
I think credit to Angami, because this is on their website. It's on the Angami Talks blog. They obviously are listed, so the transparency is needed there. We're in April. We have their full 2023 numbers. Mm-hmm. It's great to see, and you know, we're definitely admirers of what they've achieved. We're not listed, but we like to share our numbers as well. The 5 million losses in 22, it was higher in previous years. The ongoing story of Angami is that it is delisting. The Kipco had their annual party mm-hmm. This week in Dubai. I think there was photos online, and the Angami founders are part mm-hmm. of that set up now, that OSN, that Kuwaiti holding company. So it's all one entity now. You know, what happens next mm-hmm. with OSN and Angami and that entity is to be seen.
I mean,
but at least they're close
shares,
to profitability.
Yeah, I mean, their shares at least, went up to 3.69. It peaked and then it fell back to, a dollar, and then it fell to 1.10. Out of the danger zone, but probably it will delist, I believe.
Yeah, I think the transaction, the $50 million is part of that transaction with OSN Plus. Mm-hmm. We should stipulate it is OSN Plus that is to help them delist, but that's been happening for a while now. Their market cap at the moment is 72 million. If you own shares in Angami, what will happen that when it does eventually delist? Will it be spin off into a separate company? Will the OSN traditional cable service mm-hmm. Be separate to OSN Plus? From what we hear in the market is that a lot of the Angami audio listening engineers are working on that sort of streaming video technology as well. A lot of the technology mm-hmm. that OSN Plus had outsourced and had it licensed mm-hmm. is now going to be part of what they're operating. So there's a lot of efficiencies happening. It's an interesting story to follow.
It's a really interesting story. It's not easy. The reason I said I would take down the company the first day is because I would do such a bad job. Because, you know, it's not easy. It's really extremely competitive. You've got so many platforms. You know, the media industry is becoming harder and harder to navigate. You know, you've got the threat of AI for, you know, staff like journalists, content creators. And then you've got, you know, dealing with investors also, the funding kind of, I wouldn't say dropping, it did drop, but it was at an all-time high at some point, and then now it's kind of, you know, leveling up a little bit. So it's not easy. So kudos to them. Kudos to Ali Habib, who, by the way, apparently is an absolutely brilliant chef.
Oh.
Apparently that's his, he has a little... A hobby, yeah, but apparently, absolutely brilliant chef as well. So that's a random kind of.
He'll have to have you over for an interview and cook for you something like that. We can video it.
We were supposed to do that years ago. We were supposed to have kind of an interview over a cooking thing filmed, but that just
kind of, concept.
It never
might
happened.
Be renewed. You never know.
Maybe we can do it on the show.
Maybe, yeah. Ali, you're welcome.
And please do. Forgive me for that story that I published that one time and come to the studio. An Egyptian entrepreneur. Mohammed Abu Al-Naja, co-founder and president of Exits MENA, is calling for the establishment of special exchanges for emerging companies in the Arab region. We were just talking about exchanging, listing and delisting. In the West, he said a lot of the exchanges support non-profitable companies. A lot of the tech companies that listed were not profitable. A lot of them, most of them continue to be not profitable. So he's saying, why in this region do we not support more of the startups? Why do we have so many roadblocks for startups on exchanges, he said.
I think the stock markets in the US do have their criteria as well. And if you don't continue to meet those criteria after listing, you will be automatically delisted.
Right.
I'm not sure if he was talking about EGX particularly because he's Egyptian-based, but I do know that in Dubai, particularly the DFM, have an SME Bourse, they call it, and it's becoming more and more welcoming for people to list.
I had no idea, by the way, that they had an SME Bourse.
Yeah, and ADX is also welcoming as well. I attended a breakfast last week and it was fascinating. I have some notes from it. I might read them out. A lady from, we might do a story on it. The lady who runs the managing director of NASDAQ in the region is separate to NASDAQ Dubai, but she's been in the region since, I think, 2006 or something really like that. She's Swedish. And Lubna, it's fascinating. We should really write up how many stock markets around the world that the NASDAQ powers, because it's technology. It started in the 70s in the US, but it powers a lot of the Scandinavian ones, a lot of the ones here, the Tadawul in Saudi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do have a remit and a mission to provide technology to help local stock markets, the capital markets work, and then also obviously to attract people to list. But listing isn't for everyone. I think listing helps liquidity. It helps people raise funds that they mightn't get from the banks, but it also helps transparency. But you do really need to be profitable and stable to be on a public capital market.
Did you ever, because you've invested in some stocks, did you ever get, I wouldn't say obsessed, but did you, because a lot of people that get into stocks get really, really into it. Did you ever?
I didn't actually. More into football scores and results. I think the times when I was younger, I didn't invest so much. Lately, I have. Do you know what I like about the stock market in the region now, Lubna, is that if you put a few, like, and I'm talking about dirhams, like if you put a few dirhams into, not that this is investment advice, but you really get treated like a senior shareholder. Like we get invited to all the DIWA board directors meetings, investor voting things. You get text messages all the time.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. The advice wouldn't be to have shares in many, many companies. Obviously, you should have your own investment strategy and you should figure it out. But I think the transparency there is interesting, and the due diligence, the governance, the things that are put to public vote and things like
definitely,
that.
Definitely, definitely. It's just so exciting, though, because just you talking about it now, and I have a very close friend who, if he's listening now, I hope he is listening to this, because he really got me interested in stocks. He told me he used to go on holiday with family, and he used to obsess over the stocks and enjoy that more than the holiday itself. That's how passionate he was about it. So
I think, look, so this isn't the boring part, but this is DFM text messages, right? Dubai Financial Markets, which is two exchanges, the Dubai Stock Exchange and also the Nasdaq Dubai. Registration voting currently available for DIWA annual assembly meeting, which will be held on the 28th of March, 24 of them. And here's a link, and it shows you to watch it all on YouTube. And this is really interesting. I think the trading part and the up and down, the speculation part, I don't get hooked on because I don't consider myself a day trader. Sure. It's more of a long-term investor. Sure. And you know why, Lubna? Because I don't think the stock market is fair to companies, really. You know, we've seen, In the last few weeks, we've seen huge big companies lose significant value just because something someone said, like on the earnings call. You covered the Mark Zuckerberg story, but there was also something that Tesla said. And CEOs know how to manage expectations to Wall Street, but it doesn't actually prove if that company is profitable. And Warren Buffett would always say, read the annual reports. Don't get caught up in the quarterly calls, because the market is very jittery. When the chairman of the Fed, Powell, when he makes a statement about interest rates, things jump in that, and it's all very jittery. So I don't really think that sort of day trading thing is built on anything else other than speculation. I don't think people are really looking at the long-term profitability of these companies.
Right. Warren Buffett, so smart. I'll never forget his investment advice about going for the boring companies. He said, the boring companies are the ones that make the most money. Hermes is under fire after blacklisting customers for placing bags on the floor at a fashion show. Have you been shopping at Hermes lately since our last conversation about shopping at Hermes?
No, I haven't. I actually didn't even shop at that time. Someone went in to do the waiting time. I told you I didn't have time for it.
Oh my gosh, cool. That's a good problem to have.
Cool. Have you tested? Have you been complaining about the bags on the floor?
Me?
Yeah.
No, not. I think it's ridiculous, okay. And I think people have the right to be enraged about this. So basically, there were two girls at a fashion show, and obviously, at fashion shows, you know, I've been to Paris Fashion Week twice. The crowd is not that great, but the experience is wonderful. But there's no place to put your bag, right? It's often really crowded, and it's obvious that they have no place to put their Birkins. So they put their Birkins on the floor. And one of the girls was crossing her legs, and she, by mistake, hit the bag a little bit. But mind you,
someone else's bag.
No, her own bag. Oh. So Hermes apparently, so the video went viral. Okay. Because these bags sell from anywhere from starting at $10,000 to... They go up to $100,000, right? And, you know, the waiting list, the exclusivity, whatever. So Hermes said they're blacklisted now because they shouldn't put the bags on the floor because that's insulting for the Birkin bag.
So they're blacklisted as future customers?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is ridiculous because they can still get Hermes stuff, but it's such a bad PR for Hermes because people are saying, should they have sat on the floor instead and put the bags on the chairs? And then someone said, if I bought a Lamborghini, are they going to tell me where to park it and how to drive it? It's so silly.
Can you just clarify for this? Did those girls receive a message from an email from Hermes? Did Hermes put this on social media saying these people are blacklisted, or is it speculation? And do you think that it's bad PR, or do Hermes do these things on purpose to add to the exclusivity and the prestige of an owner?
Hermes have put out a statement about this, but what is your second question?
Like, is it bad PR, or are they actually doing this on purpose to kind of keep the prestige high?
It's both. I think they're doing this to keep the prestige high, but I think it's also bad PR, you know? Don't you think so? I mean, do you think they have the right to do this after you've used your own money to purchase this bag? I mean,
no, but I wonder. I wonder. Are they doing it knowing that it'll be bad PR? Is there intent in their strategy?
Right, to get it to become even more exclusive. I mean, I don't know how much more exclusive a Birkin can get. You know,
of course, I think the whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering from a marketing point of view, are they intent or not? I think the whole thing is ridiculous. If you own a bag, you can do it how you want with the bag. It's your bag.
I mean, you know what? Despite the backlash and everything, it's definitely part of their kind of marketing plan. And then, you know, but despite the backlash, like, are they? Is anything gonna? Is it gonna affect them? Not really. It's still gonna be Hermes.
What do you think about Farhana from Dubai Bling and one of the episodes renting an Hermes?
I think it's. You want me to be honest, or you want me to
be honest?
Be diplomatic. I think it's sad. I think it's really sad. I don't know how much she paid to rent that, but like you pay to. I don't know. Then again, you pay to rent a dress, but to rent that Hermes, like, how much do you have to pay to do that? And then also, if it's rented, it doesn't have the same prestige, right? There's no point in renting.
Looks good in photos, though. Looks good in photos.
I can see your facial expression, and I know that you I know that you're being very sarcastic. You know how I feel about that. Anyways, Dubai and Abu Dhabi are among the top five places to work this year. That's according to the latest global talent survey conducted by StepStone Group's Total Jobs. So Dubai has held its position at third place since 2019, which marks an increase of three slots from 2018. Meanwhile, Abu Dhabi secured the fourth spot, climbing one position from its 2019 ranking.
Love all these stats, because it just feels like we see these headlines all the time. We become so used to them, but actually, it's not a given. It's not a given that Abu Dhabi is a great place to work. Abu Dhabi has worked really hard on livability. Riyadh isn't on that. Riyadh's going to spend 10, 15 years trying to get not just on the list, but actually be a great place to work.
Exactly.
And when it achieves it, and when it's just de facto, people will be like, well, obviously. Mm. But no, like, I remember I've been going to Riyadh since 2012, back and forth. And for the first few years, I would tell people in my CrossFit class in Dubai, Arabs, and they would be like, they've never been to Saudi. And they would just turn their nose up as if, like, I have a prison sentence for a few days, you know? Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to Saudi. Oh, God, no, don't go there.
Yeah, I remember people used to do that as well, yeah.
It's not that long ago. And it still isn't. But I think you mentioned one of the shows I listened last week with Farhad that, like, you guys were interested in Saudi now. Mm. That's a perception change. And then even more so, this will happen globally. Because we've been talking to, obviously, we live in Abu Dhabi and we have an office down there. We were supposed to go there last night as a whole office to watch Cirque du Soleil, but we couldn't because of the weather. But, like, you know, from speaking to the initiatives and the entities down there, ADQ, Mubadala, over the years, we know that they're trying to attract talent. We know that livability is important. And to be listed as a great place to work is important, not just to be listed, but to actually be a great place to live and work.
Definitely. Not just that, like, there was a story that came out, I think yesterday, that British investors have now overtaken the Russian and the Chinese here in Dubai as the number one investors. London is, even though London ranks, according to this report, as the top city globally for work, with 71% of survey respondents citing job opportunities as their main reason for considering a move to the UK. And then they mentioned quality of life and safety, stability and security. London, I don't know, that's very strange. But the fact that the British investors have now overtaken the Russians and the Chinese and are coming to Dubai says a lot.
Yeah, London's not safe. Not safe at all. No. Like, lucky to go through a period there without getting your phone taken off you or walking down the street, stuff like that. Like,
or
it's
stabbed.
Bad.
Or, I mean, one of my friends had his watch stolen. I mean, it's normal thing to have your watch stolen in London. Actually, I spoke to someone who she's an entrepreneur. She came here. She wants to live between London and Dubai, partly because of the safety. Also, she gets followed around all the time. Not safe. But she said she has her real jewelry in Paris, and then she has her fake jewelry in London because she can't wear anything. She can't. She
That's
stopped
terrible,
wearing
isn't it?
Her watch. Totally, it is.
It sounded like I was being sarcastic, but my thought was intent. Like, it is, isn't it ridiculous that you can't, like, that you don't feel safe
in London
on your body? Like, it's stupid.
Yeah,
and I kept saying, but going back to the point about overtaking the Russian and Chinese, it just does go to show these long established capitals in Europe are very very wealthy cities. Mm. You know, there's the capitalism through London over the years, the stock market, and very wealthy cities, lots of wealthy investors, and even some of the European capitals. So, you know, some of the capitals in the region here aren't, they're historic in culture, but they're not as wealthy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So I was just a couple of days in Atlantis Royal. I should give it a shout out. Like, it was very interesting to see how that hotel operates from the inside.
It's beautiful. Really, really beautiful.
And such a good job. Yeah.
I've only been to one event there. I haven't been to any of the restaurants or anything, but it looks incredible. So what was it like?
They've done a really good job. It was just interesting when you mentioned the languages. Well, I just thought of the Russian language because all the place names on the food at the breakfast had English and Russian, not any other language, not English and Arabic, English and Russian.
Really?
Like the chalk on the names of the breakfast dishes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They must know the occupancy and they must know the how many residents from one country.
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can't. I love it. It makes me feel like I'm in Russia again.
Not Arabic, which is fascinating. They must have looked at how many residents and then be adapted up. But I was fascinated by it. You know, we obviously know a lot of the hotels in Dubai, but, you know, I used to go to Zabil Zarai quite a bit over the years. Not to stay, but I'd go out there for the week, for the spa or whatever. And I would be taken a little bit by, you know, a lot of these hotels have shops in them, but some of the shops almost feel out of touch. They don't feel as welcoming as a mall shop.
Yeah.
But the design
is very old school.
Yeah, very old school. And you wouldn't really want to buy anything there.
Yeah.
You think they're designed just in case anyone's desperate to get swim shorts and they can't afford it. Like, that's their sole purpose.
Imagine missing out on that opportunity and having like that really bad stock.
Yeah.
Why?
But obviously in Atlantis Royal, the shops are designer. But it's very welcoming. Like, there was an Onas Dolce & Gabbana collab. There's an art gallery from downtown who are set up there. There are lots of different setups and lots of different things. High-end jewelry, but just very welcoming to browse around.
Mm.
Lots of different variety of stores there. It just felt well designed, you know. A lot of the collabs, there was a nice barbershop. There's nice little cafes. There's just very, very welcoming. And the gym itself, right? The gym looks quite cool. And we went in one morning and we were like, oh, can we do a workout? And there was no classes. And they said, well, the studio has a video player, a big wall, and it has an on-demand class. And Level Fitness, shout out to them, LVL Fitness, who have a place in downtown. They used to be called Switch way back. Gary Blowers is one of the founders there. They received investment last summer from Multiply Group in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, amazing.
They powered the studios in Atlantis Royal. So we were able to tell the instructor what type of class we wanted in the morning. And we got an on-demand with two people pre-shot at Atlantis Royal. And we had a 40-minute workout.
Really?
On our own time, the studio to ourselves.
Wow, that's,
you know,
impressive.
What I mean? Certain little things that are just very nicely integrated.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see the collab with another kind of fitness Dubai startup as well.
So you were on holiday and you decided to go to the gym.
I had a one-day staycation in the hotel.
And you spent your morning in the gym.
We did a workout, yeah.
You really enjoy it. Like, you really enjoy
that. I earned
the
breakfast. The breakfast is absolutely top-notch. Breakfast,
I mean,
excellent.
I love it. I love that where, yeah, so different. Like, I would, yeah. You know what? I have a dream of becoming one of those people that wakes up in the morning and goes for a run. You know, I wish I can be one of those people.
It's not that hard. Just do it.
No, yeah, that's...
I'll take you.
I don't think so. I think it'll be like a torture session with your...
It's quite fun.
Your run marathons, etc. So I would not make it past 5 minutes. Right, UAE companies have nearly 11% female board members, exceeding the GCC average. Women hold close to 11% of board seats in publicly listed companies in the UAE. The GCC average is 5.3%, as reported by the 2024 GCC Board Gender Index from Harriet Watts University and Aurora 50. In January this year, women occupied 133 out of 1,231 board seats in 168 companies listed on the ADX, Abu Dhabi Securities Exchange, and Dubai Financial Market, DFM, representing 10.8% of the total. You get it. I'm not going to go into more of the very impressive, excellent numbers. But I remember there was suddenly a switch to whether you go to register your company, whether you go to the banks, whatever it was, all the government entities really started pushing women, giving them a lot of opportunities. And all of a sudden, now you also have parking in the malls for pregnant women, pink parking, and then some parking is also just for women, not even for pregnant women. It's incredible what the UAE is doing for women.
I think people could look into this even further because, so this is a UAE study, ADX and DFM is UAE study, and the companies on the stock markets here are predominantly UAE state or semi-state companies. Like there haven't been that many private companies. There's some, but there's not that many foreign-owned companies yet. And we get the prospectuses of the seven companies that have been listed of the 10 in the last sort of year or so. And you, Lubna, you look at the perspective and you look at the board and the board are usually Emirati. So I think it's quite fascinating because I don't think there's criteria. I don't think there's a rule that it has to be 50-50. So this is all organic. This is all like, you know, people will say, do Emirati females have jobs and have positions? They do. So, you know, I think the report shows how that compares with elsewhere in the Gulf and elsewhere globally. This number will only go up. Like, you know, it should be, it should really be 50-50 if not. But it's, I like that it's going organically. Like 11% isn't that high. But I think, firstly, the thing to point out is that they tend to be Emiratis on these boards, even if the CFO isn't from the Emirates. Or the CEO or the C-suite, the board directors tend to be. So there's a still, you know, we will see more and more expats, immigrants, foreigners on these boards, and we'll see more females. But the fact that it's 11% already and it's largely Emirati females who are on these boards is really impressive.
Absolutely, yeah, really, really impressive. Good point about it being organic also, because the government was pushing for that. But generally, when it comes to Emirati and Saudi women, they are so hardworking. Why? Because they have something to prove, right? You know, even with me, when it came to my dad and my brother, I had to first beg my dad to let me work, let me go and be basically a promoter at the Dubai Trade Center conferences. He said, I'll just give you the money. I don't want you to go working these long hours as a girl. So as a girl, you have to actually push to be given that opportunity.
Interesting. So. No, I get it. I just think, you know, firstly, the transparency. So an independent company has done this. The access, all that information is there because these reports are listed. The board of directors are official and public.
Yeah.
And Smashy Business is covering it. There's a female leading Smashy Business talking about it. But also, like, I think this is literally just the start. It does give me hope, and it gives me, like, I believe in the sort of the business environment in the region over the century. And I think, like, this is a start, and I think those numbers will only go up. Two of our four board members are female. Three of our five shareholders are female. You know, 55% of our staff are female. Yeah. Like, we had female MDs, like, and this is all organic. I remember we took part to the UN WIP, it's called, the Women's, I must get the acronym right, but we were one of the only companies in the media industry that signed the pledge for that. And as part of that, we did a diversity, equity, and inclusion survey. And this was without even having a strategy or trying. And I'll show you the results of it. But like, I think like 100% of our staff at the time, there were 70 staff, believed that we were inclusive towards females in the company. And without even trying, like, it was like 50 or 60% was female. But we would only be able to do that if people like you went through university in Dubai and were available to be employed, you know?
Right.
And these perspectives that the same in Saudi, I think Princess Noor University, Noor University in Riyadh, Lubna has, and you can check these stats, but something like 60,000 students, or 40 or 60,000 students. So 20, 30,000 female graduates every year in Riyadh. They don't all have jobs, but that's education. And people will say, oh, but the universities aren't good in Saudi. Like, they always have a negative. They always have a but. And like, it's a university degree. It's 3-4 years of academia. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, why do we have to be so critical? You know?
Yeah. Not just that. They've grown and they've made so many changes in such a short period of time. Like, just let them advance without, you know, the constant criticism. But Yeah, great point about it being organic, because women don't also want to be employed just because they're women, right? So how much better is it that it happened organically the way it should happen, you know, instead of like just giving them jobs just because they're women.
Yeah.
Great talk today. Are we gonna see you? The viewers have been asking. It's not me. Are you gonna be co-hosting more often? Perhaps once a week next week?
I will do what we can. Yeah, it's good. But talking about the upcoming, so there's a lot of things happening this month. I think the Raven Travel Market, huge travel sector event is happening in World yep. Trade Center, yep. where the next Lubna Hamdans are promoting the event.
Oh, that's so
the
nice.
University time the for extra pocket money.
we're going to be the doing the business. Show from there as well.
Brilliant.
We're going to be there, and we have the Arab Media Forum coming up as well, and then the another summit in Qatar. Also, that's going to be
the Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg in Qatar is
yes,
taking
the
place.
Forum, yes.
Yeah, and there's a lot of events in Saudi. There's the Creative Industry Summit. There's a food event, like a kind of like Gulf Food, taking place in Riyadh as well. So I think May is going to be a very busy month with conferences and events, and yeah. Smashy Business will be there all the way.
Looking forward to it. Thank you guys for listening. You know where to get us. You know the drill. And we'll see you on Monday.